Welcome to Comedians Talking Baseball, our weekly MLB recap podcast where myself, comedian Joe Kilgallen, and comedian Mike Bryanstein shoot the shit with you, talk what's going on in the world of sports, and give you some baseball history. We're both amateur baseball historians, as it were, and that's really what this podcast has become. We get into the history of baseball, and we bring it back to present day. Brido, how you doing, my man?
I'm great, Joseph.
That was the first time I ever said shoot the shit in the intro. I think I might let it stay.
I like it.
I don't know. Maybe I should be more professional sounding, but it's a podcast. You can say what you want.
The NBA's over. People are going to start needing to shoot the shit about the baseball.
Yeah. Hockey's over and the NBA's over. So congratulations to the fan bases of the Washington Capitals and the Golden State Warriors. Yeah. I'm glad the Washington Capitals won. In basketball, I knew the Golden State Warriors were going to win. It was very anticlimactic and kind of boring, if you ask me. Obviously, there's a lot of greatness on the court with KD, LeBron James, and Curry. But it was boring. So that's why I like baseball. New winners every year. New competition every year.
Last night, my wife asked me when it started.
Oh, really?
Finals, yeah. Because I watched Game 7s, and I was like into it. And then I was like, yeah, I'll get into it after a little bit. And then it was over.
It was quick. It was quick and not, I mean, the first game was obviously incredibly close, tough calls. I don't really want to break down the NBA Finals. This is a baseball podcast, but I will lead off with this because it's a question I brought up for the NBA that I think all sports should do, NFL, MLB, of course, and NHL. NHL, though, I'm glad the Capitals won, though, because Ovechkin is a beast, and that guy's earned it. And the Vegas Golden Knights, an expansion team, winning their first year, get out of here. What are you, long-suffering Vegas hockey fans?
I saw
my ass.
Baseball.
No, you don't get a Stanley Cup that quickly. And it would have been really embarrassing for the league because clearly their GMs did a bad job protecting certain players in an expansion draft.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the question I posed on Facebook. It wasn't really a question, but more of a declaration, if you will. The Golden State Warriors only swept one team in the NBA playoffs, and that was in the finals, the Cleveland Cavaliers. So to me, when I see something like that happen, not just in the NBA, but in any sport, I'm thinking, let's get rid of conferences. Let's get rid of leagues. Let's just seed the teams. I think you and I maybe have talked about that off air before with baseball because we're both diehard Cubs fans. And in 2015, the Cubs would have been the 3 seed.
Right.
But because of the stupid divisions and whatnot, which I think are stupid now, of course, they had a great place at one point, but the Pirates and the Cubs, who had the second and third best record in baseball that year, were facing off in a one-game playoff. So after one game, you're missing one of your best teams. That's I think that's bad for your sport.
Yeah, it is. It is right? A weird thing. Because the way it all started was that, I mean, you won your league, and then you played a team from the other league that you didn't play the whole season. I mean, interleague games has kind of diminished that. Expansion playoffs has kind of diminished that. A statistician would tell you that seven games doesn't decide anything, really. It's just that's what they went with.
Totally. And in baseball, that do or die game for the wildcard teams is exciting. It's great, but it's not really fair from what you just did. You just had a 162-game season. And that's not representative. I mean, football doing one games makes sense because they don't play series. Basketball and hockey are both 82 games, but they play a best of seven for every round. Where baseball, I mean, I guess you could count the play-in game as a round. And then the next round is a best of five, which again is like a fraction of the season you just completed. I don't know. I feel like they could do a little bit more. I mean, there's always talk of should we cut the season down to like 150 games and then add some more playoff games? Sometimes I think that'd be the way to go.
I think that what happened was, do you remember like 7 years ago, the last day of the season, when the Rays were playing and the Red Sox and the Orioles were all playing at the same time? And like I started getting like text messages like from people flipping back and forth between the games because it was coming down to the wire, like between like four teams who was going to make it in. And that day was so exciting. they called it like the greatest single day in baseball like history. And I think that they wanted to repeat that. I think because right after that, I've never heard anybody say that, if that's what Bud Selig did, or I think, yeah, it had to be Selig. But to try to get that excitement into a one game series, I personally don't have a problem with it, because it's like you have more games against your own division than the other teams. Win your division. And if you can't win your division, win a one game playoff like you would do if it was a play into the postseason like they've done so many times in the past.
Well, totally. I mean, the most famous call in baseball history is the Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant from Robbie Thompson. I always forget sometimes it's Robbie or Bobby Thompson, because
that one was Bob. That one was Bobby.
That was Bobby. But there was a Robbie Thompson in the late 80s who played for the Giants.
That's correct.
Yes. That's why I always kind of messed it. Because, you know, as a kid, I remember going, Robbie Thompson, I know him. I have his baseball card. But it was obviously Bobby Thompson. Hit a 3-run homer to win the game, and it sent the Giants to the World Series, because they were tied at the end of the year, so it was a one-game playoff. So right. I get it. And I remember that day you're talking about. I remember, I believe, the Tampa Bay Rays under Joe Maddon came back from, they were down like 7-0 late and came back and won the game against the Yankees. That was I was at a bar and we were all going insane. The whole bar, everyone was all of a sudden Yankee and Rays fans, or Rays fans, I should say. Nobody was rooting for the Yankees. I mean, come on, you had your fun. outside of New York, I don't know too many people, like casual sports fans, who were like, yeah, you know who I want to see win some more games? The Yankees. I feel like, you know, they should win some more.
True. Although last year during the playoffs, they were so young that I was kind of like, you know what? This is fun. This is the first time I ever thought these Yankees are fun.
You're right. They were a fun team. They kind of didn't have that attitude. I always feel like the Yankees have like a waspy attitude, or a wasp like type aura, where they're like, look at their pinstripes. How fancy are we? Protestant? Yes. I know they play in the Bronx and their fan base doesn't have that. Like, you think of the typical, you know, Yankee fan doing the Bronx cheer, but for some reason the Yankees, their place in baseball society.
Oh, with the no facial hair. And
yeah, they seem very like, what are those rich families? Like the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers. They seem kind of like that to me.
Yeah, you got to be a Rockefeller to afford decent seats there, tell you that much.
But the reason I think getting rid of, even in, like, in a sport like baseball, it's National League, American League, and you got all the divisions, I think it'd be fun. Because to me, divisions started as a way to form rivals. Back in the day, they were like, all right, these two cities are close to each other. Let's have them play in the same division, or, you know, back before divisions started, the same league, so they could compete for, and then geographically rivalries will take place, and that's good for the sport. But now we're in the digital age. I was living in Los Angeles the last 3 years before this past year moved back to Chicago. You're still in LA. We're Cubs fans. We could follow the Cubs religiously, being 2,000 miles away.
Right.
Because of MLB.tv and the internet and everything like that. I don't feel the sense, I don't feel like the idea that divisions are even that important anymore. I almost feel like just have tried to create as balanced a schedule as you can, and then just seed the teams, the top 10 seeds, because baseball's 10 teams, that you could have the 9 and 10 have a one game playoff to get into the top 8, I suppose. And then
What do you mean 10 teams?
In baseball, you have 5 teams in each league make the playoffs. The 4 and 5 have a wild card game. Why am I talking about your dick? Oh. I could have just explained it without sounding like that. All right. That's what I mean. You know, it's, you know, there's the 3 divisions and 2 wild card teams. So 6 division winners, 2 wild card teams. That's
What if someone told you, hey man, like, we play in Seattle. Do you really think that it's fair that I have to fly to Miami to, you know, for this playoff series, that sort of thing?
I hear that argument. I see it this way. Like,
Cincinnati to Pittsburgh, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to, that's why they do the divisions. So you face it's, but it's geographical. But if you play in Seattle, you're not going to be facing the Marlins 17 times a year. You'd face them, I don't know, a few times a year, one series there, one series here. And you would try to do it on a road trip where it's like, all right, we're flying to Atlanta. And then after that, we're facing Miami. And then we'll go over to Tampa, and then we'll go to Texas, and then back home, like, or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I think your point is well made and everything.
I just want the best two teams facing each other in their championship. That did not happen.
That argument works better for other sports, though, because with baseball, isn't there? I mean, like, I know that a good team is going to win 100 games. That's like a good standard for, like, this team is awesome. And I know that a playoff team wins 84 to 88 games. They're on the fringe, right?
Sure.
So the best team still loses around 60 games.
They say every team wins 57, every team loses 57. It's what you do with the other 57 that set yourself apart. Or that's 54. That was bad math on my end just there.
So, I mean, I think that you're looking at a better chance of an upset in baseball than in any other sport. Like, when I was growing up, like, the NFC Championship was considered, like, the true Super Bowl. Or, you know, there were years when they said that, like, the Eastern Conference Finals in basketball or whatever else.
Well, now it's the Western Conference Finals.
The Western Conference Finals, fine.
But no, I hear your point. And the NFC was dominant in the late 80s, early 90s for football.
Right. But it's like the All-Star game now. I mean, for every year back in like the 70s or whatever, it was just assumed the National League was going to win. Now, like, who fucking knows? Two, like, in the World Series, the past 2 years have gone 7 games. And then Royals Giants went 7 games. I don't know how many Mets Royals went. 5 games.
Who went 5 games? You make a good point with baseball, and I've actually said this about baseball and hockey. Because baseball and hockey, to me, there are a lot of great athletes in both sports, but they're skilled games in the sense that one player's athleticism can't truly just take over. Like in baseball, whatever team has the hot pitching going into the playoffs usually is a good favorite to bet on. In hockey, whoever has the hot goaltender, usually a good team to bet on. Where basketball and football, because those sports are more athletic-based in talent, you know what I mean? Like a running back, if you're a frequent athlete at running back, you don't really have a bad game the way you have a bad game in baseball, where it's just like, I just couldn't make good contact today. You know what I mean? There's so much more. You're more in control as an athlete in the NBA and the NFL. Because especially in basketball, you're one of 5 people. That's why it's so important to use
rings
as a thing in basketball. I know a lot of people, that's a team sport. It shouldn't count with the rings and stuff like that. But it does a little bit. Obviously, stats are most important. I always hate when someone says, oh, so Robert Horry's better than Michael Jordan? No, idiot. You're comparing a role player to a superstar. I'm saying when you're equating superstars, you know, winning a ring or two, usually you kind of have to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, you go statistics first.
I don't know, man. Like,
when you hear me though, right? I'm not making complete.
Yeah. I just know that, like, who, like, Max Scherzer doesn't pitch every day. Barry Bonds couldn't hit every single at bat.
If that's Barry the point, yeah.
Caught a fly ball in the outfield, he didn't get to run as fast as he could to home plate and hit.
Exactly. You know,
I mean,
in basketball, your best player could literally touch the ball on every play.
Yes.
That's no, like, and in football, obviously, there's two sides of the ball, offense and defense. So maybe not as much control there. I just didn't like that. It doesn't happen often, and you're right. And baseball's got enough parity where it's a new winner every year. There hasn't been a repeat since the Yankees in 1999-2000. The Rangers in 2011 and 2012 went back-to-back years, didn't win either. The Royals went back-to-back years, 1-1. It's rare that, I mean, the Giants had their every other year with their Believe Even. And, you know, but for the most part, there are some new teams pop out of nowhere.
Right.
Where in other sports, it usually is the same group all the time.
Yeah, so, I mean, unless you see, like, a major problem with it, like that year, like 2015 with the Cardinals, Cubs, and Pirates, it's just like, I don't know, man, win your fucking division.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. That's the thing. Win the division. My question is, are divisions and conferences and, well, leagues in baseball's case, are they working themselves to be obsolete?
I mean, if there's a situation where every single team in, let's say, the American League West is like somehow, I don't know if it's mathematically possible, but A, not only above 500, but everybody's around like 84 wins at the end of the year. And the American League Central, let's just say the Central, is dog shit. And the Indians win with like a 520 percentage, right? Like,
yeah.
Is someone might say, look at that shit. Shouldn't more blah, 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 you know, from the West play in the playoffs than the Central where it's all garbage? And I don't know, like the Cubs would be in first place in like almost every division. The Indians would not. But I don't know, man. Like that's a scenario where if three teams are the best three and then the rest of them are just good, I don't have a problem with it. But in a scenario where an entire division is garbage, then yes. But I don't know.
It's one of those things where it's so rare. It doesn't happen as often. Obviously, the Cardinals that one year won like 83 games. And I think, was it the other one, the World Series? They like were. They battled some injuries and they got healthy at the right time too. If I recall, that was like in 2006, I want to say, or 2011. I wanted the World Series they won.
Recent, yeah. The greatest comeback team in history.
Oh, yeah, that was. It was 2011 against the Rangers that happened then, I believe. So, I mean, yeah, it's rare that it happens where a whole division does suck, but it does happen. And in those years, you feel bad for the fan bases of teams where it's like, okay, they have to get a represent, you know, they have to have their division winner in.
Yeah.
So because of that, a team that is second place with 96 wins to a team that had 103, like, you know, like whatever happens in the West in certain years with the Astros lately. That's a bummer, you know. It's a bummer for that, and it's also a bummer as a baseball fan who wants to see the best teams in the playoffs because you know you're getting robbed of a couple good teams. It's so rare that is it really a problem? I hear you. I just like to take the other side of the issue because it's kind of fun to play that out. Where what if we do a DH? You get rid of National American League. There's just Major League Baseball, and you got your 30 teams, and obviously you'd have to the DH across the board because otherwise, how do you divide it? So I guess that you'd lose some fun there for the old school fans who kind of like, no, I like a good double switch. I like to see managers actually have to manage. I understand that. Different argument, I guess. But if you were to have one universal league, you'd have to have the DH or just get rid of it altogether.
You do power rankings or you do what?
Like how you decide who makes the playoffs?
Yeah. Okay. Because
record, you do it based on record. Everyone plays 162 games. You just try to make the schedule as even as possible. Right now, the schedules still aren't balanced. People think they are. They're not. I remember one year the NL Central teams played the AL East teams for interleague play. The AL East is stacked. So the two wild cards came out of the NL West who faced the AL Central who were garbage. So they got an extra few wins there. And at the end of the year, all the wins count the same. And, you know, that's not a balanced schedule in that regard. So, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't even planning on starting this with the podcast, but I think it's a fun thing to explore.
Well, one point that you made that I had never even thought of, which is I think a majority of fans want the National League to get the DH. When that happens, what is the point of having two different leagues? Tell me one reason other than tradition that you would even have a National League and American League if the National League gets a DH. There's zero reason.
Yeah, you're right. There would be zero reason other than tradition, which, of course, baseball holds on to more than any other sport.
You would lose the All-Star game.
I guess with the All-Star game, maybe they do something fun like the NBA did this past year that hockey had been doing for a while where they just pick captains and do it like that. But what would it be called? Team Joey Votto versus Team Aaron Judge. I don't know who the hell the captains would be.
Do you think people would be furious though, right, about the All-Star game?
I think they would be because the whole tradition of NL versus AL. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not even saying I want all this. I'm just proposing the question.
Oh, right. No, it's worth talking about. Here's the other thing. Do you end up caring what a team's record was when they go to the playoffs other than just some random 2001 Mariners like trivia question? Or if somebody goes, you know, the Cubs in 2004 had a better record then they, in 2003, people would be like, "Oh, that's interesting." And then they didn't make the playoffs, so who gives a fuck?
Yeah. I would only look at the records for, like you said, trivial reasons. I don't typically look at records of playoff teams because you figure out who was home field. Oh, that team had a better record. I don't look it up exactly going, oh, they won 99 games. They won 97 games. Like, I don't really, if there were seeding, like, oh, the one seed is facing the eighth seed, I'd be like, oh, well, that's cool. Let's see the disparities between the two teams.
They do kind of do that. The number one seed plays the wild card every year.
That's true. They do that. Yes.
So, I mean, other than that.
But I'm saying is like, so the 1 year, all right, so you have your three division winners, your two wild card teams. And again, I keep going back to 2015 as the example because it's just the most recent one. I'm sure it's happened before in other, you know, years. That year, if there were no divisions, and you would have the one seed would have been the Cardinals, the two seed the Pirates, the three seed the Cubs, the four seed the Nationals, I believe. The four seed the Dodgers, the five seed the Mets. Is that how that went? Yeah, the Mets won the division, the Dodgers won the division, and then three teams came out of the Central. So that would be, you know, if you're going to have your one-game playoff, it would have been the Dodgers versus the Mets instead of the Cubs versus the Pirates. Because the Cubs were really the three seed, but they were treated like a five seed, even though right. They had a three seed record.
Yeah,
I mean, that way, like, you know, and then the Mets beat us. And then, maybe I'm just mad that we still lost to the Mets. But the Mets pitching staff was sick that year. And they had some good hitters, too. Cespedes. Granderson killed less in that series, if I recall.
Man, have you ever looked at Curtis Granderson's stats from the beginning of the decade? You forget that dude, he put up some years where you're like, what?
Yeah, he definitely had like a Alfonso Soriano type thing where you're like, oh, it's the leadoff hitter who had 38 home runs.
Right.
Right. Had a 310 on base percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some weird years like that. All right. Maybe we'll revisit the division thing. Or if anyone listening, I know we got a lot of listeners who've been more vocal lately, which I like that. So keep that going, guys. Really appreciate that.
What's up, Bart Hag? What's up, Josh Sneed? What's up, Donkey? What's up, Dylan?
Yeah. What's up, boys? If you guys tell me I'm an idiot and why I'm wrong, if you want to send us some messages on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, next week we'll explore this a little bit further. And I did want to give a shout out to Jay Jaffe because I'm recommended, because we were talking about his book a little bit last week, which I still have to pick up my copy. It's called Cooperstown Casebook.
Yes.
And he created the Jaws system, which is badass.
Yes.
If you're a baseball nerd like we are, you're going to be into that. And he liked our Instagram post. I posted on Instagram saying, hey, check out this book and all that kind of stuff. This is the book we were talking about because I wanted the listeners to, you know, get their hands on a copy. He also wrote an article on Fangraphs that is, it's a great read. It's titled Rest in Peace, Anthony Bourdain, Passionate Baseball Fan. Anthony Bourdain, we found out yesterday morning that he died of suicide. His body was found in France. Real tragic. A guy that everyone seemed to love. I never heard anyone say anything bad about Anthony Bourdain unless you were one of the, you know, shitty politicians he was coming after. and then, you know, Kate Spade, so I didn't want to just forget about anyone. Yeah, it's been a week in which suicide has been put in the forefront there. So there's a weird little glitch on the sound there, but not to sound like a broken record, because I know people have been posting, but, you know, if you do, you know, check in on the people you love, even if they look like they're doing great, you know, if think about that person you haven't talked in a while, give them a what's up. A text.
Also the baseball. That Cooperstown Casebook book, I sent copies to my dad and my brother-in-law because I would prefer if our conversation level was kicked up to modern day. You know what I mean? Like,
are they still bringing up Joe Carter's RBI total and stuff like that?
I'm telling you, if you're listening to this and you just need like a book you can pick up and sit down and we were like, go, huh, that's interesting. Like, I just read the chapter on Burt Blyleven and Jack Morris and how sabermetrics helped. Like, we always talk about who did it help and who did it hurt. I guess the poster boy for who it helped is Burt Blyleven. Period. That dude was Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, he was a great pitcher.
But at the time, like, his win-loss record would be like 17-15, and people are like, ah, who gives a shit? But then you look at his, like, his WAR, his FIP. The dude was a workhorse who struck out, like, the fifth most people in baseball history. He was a fucking machine with sabermetrics. Jack Morris would win 20 games with Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell behind him with, like, a 4 ERA, and he wasn't that good, and he just went into the Hall of Fame because these old-school guys took him up as, like, almost like he represented something to them. You know what I mean? So that chapter was very interesting about, you know, Blylevin and the new school people and Jack Morris and the, you know, the old school. I'm happy for Jack Morris for getting in. It's not his fault that, you know, everybody had it wrong for so long.
Well, I like that you said that, though, because I took that off away from Brian Kenny's book, Ahead of the Curve, when he talks about Hall of Fame. And he says, I never want to say someone shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, because these are people with families, and they're, you know, people want to see their dad in the Hall of Fame, or their uncle, their friend, whatever. So, you know, I don't want to do a, he didn't want to do a chapter where it's like, here's why this person shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but that person, he wanted to spend his ink saying, this is why this player should be in the Hall of Fame, instead of trying to take away from the people who've gotten in. Cause you're right. Yeah. It's not Jack Morris's fault that people didn't know what they were watching back then, you know? So
it's always interesting when, like, somebody comes along culturally, and it happens in a lot of things, and says, like, the only way I can think of it, and bear with me here, is with pro wrestling. When I was a little kid, pro wrestling, people kind of said it was fake, and I was like, nah, it's real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hogan faced Andre in WrestleMania 3, and I thought it was the greatest thing of all time. Hogan body slammed him, and he won. Wrestling was real, and that match was awesome. 2 years later, they're not even pretending it's real anymore, and people start going like, well, if it's fake and they can do whatever they want, that match fucking sucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's...
So... It went from something that went, it's real and that match was awesome, to it's fake. Well, dude, they're slow as hell and blah, blah, blah. The real match was Savage Steamboat. And people, like, analyze what makes a good match. Now, seriously, you can go on the internet and there's, like, a rating system for matches. You can talk to, I know that you've had, like, Marty DeRosa and Colt Cabana on your other podcast. Ask them about Dave Meltzer. That's like the Bill James of wrestling. And, like, it's funny that in my lifetime, two things that I enjoy have been completely flipped on their heads. I'm not saying I thought wrestling was real recently. I'm saying that, like, as a little kid, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this where people aren't walking away going, Brido thinks fucking wrestling is real?
But, yeah, you believe in Santa. It's cool, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's like figuring out that somebody appreciates wrestling as a fake thing, the way that they do movies as a fake thing, is interesting to me.
That's why it's called sports entertainment. They call it professional wrestling sports entertainment.
Like, right.
I get it. And I'm a wrestling fan. And I, like you, wasn't aware of the great technical wrestlers and why that was the better match versus this. I remember when Marty DeRosa and Colt Cabana, who I had on my other podcast, Kill Gallons Pub. I remember hanging out with Marty DeRosa, and I was talking about my favorite wrestlers of, like, the 90s and stuff like that. And I liked all the big dudes.
Yeah.
I like Big Daddy Cool Diesel, Big Sexy Kevin Nash. Like, I was into, like, those guys. Like, he was...
That's the same person.
Yeah, I know, the same person. But, you know, I liked all, like, the Giant, the Big Show. I'm giving you their WCW name and their WWE name.
Thank you.
Goldberg. You know, I like The Rock, of course, and Stone Cold as well. But I didn't appreciate Dean Malenko.
Right.
Like, he's telling me, like, oh, Dean Malenko's one of the best wrestlers ever. I'm like, that guy was boring. Okay. I don't care how good he does arm bars. It's boring. Like, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
I felt like this is where I'm getting my entertainment from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to go see, you're equating it to movies. I want to see the summer blockbuster. You want to go see some indie art house flick.
Right.
You know, the summer blockbuster is Hogan versus Andre the Giant. and you guys want to watch something on the undercard. But don't get me wrong, I like the cruiserweights. Like, I was a big Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrero and La Parca. That was a fun. WCW had a great cruiserweight division.
Those were some deep cut late 90s WCW cruiserweights.
Yeah, man. It was a lot of fun. I miss those days. But you're right. So I kind of felt that way reading about some sabermetric stuff where I'm like, when I first got into it, you're naturally like, all right, let's see what everyone's talking about.
Right, right.
But like we said a million times on the podcast, it usually will take someone you already thought was great and shows you how they were even better than you thought.
9.5 times out of 10.
Yes. I mean, obviously there's some cases where you're like, all right, well, that guy was overrated. You know, and it's funny, like, I have gone back and forth with the Fangraphs war versus the Baseball Reference war, F4B war. And with pitching, it bothers me slightly, though.
Yeah, their regular war for position players is roughly the same. The pitching thing is where it throws me off, and I lean towards Fangraphs on their pitching war.
I just feel like there needs to be something that shows more love to the pitchers who draw weak contact as opposed to striking everyone out.
They would tell you in FIP that is not going to happen.
I know, that's what I mean. And I do like the FIP stat. And this is funny. I tweeted out a video today, everyone. Well, you'd be listening to this on Monday, but yesterday, Sunday, where you're listening, of Matt Latos is playing indie ball. Like, I don't know what independent league, probably that big one that like the Newark Bears are in or something. And I only saw the video right before you and I recorded, so I didn't really get to dive into what happened and why, but he threw at a guy. It was funny because he threw at a guy. He tried to hit him the first time, and there's a fan, it's fan cell phone footage of it. I retweeted with a comment from the Twitter that tweeted it was Evil Joey Votto, which is kind of a funny Twitter account. So I'll give them some love. Follow at Evil Joey Votto. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter as well. It's so Matt Latos, we all remember, that guy came up as a stud with the Padres.
And oh, the Reds.
Yeah, he was a big arm and had some really good years and a promising future, and then it just kind of all fell apart for him. But back to the FIP stat, I remember when he was on the White Sox, his first like 6 weeks, the White Sox were off to like a good start that year. I can't remember what year it was. Maybe it was 2015 or 2016. I can't remember. Anyway, within the last 3 or 4 years, he had like a 0.89 ERA after 5 starts. And everyone's like, is this Matt Latos finally coming to the potential that he was predicted when he first came into the league? And he had like, you know, a 3.2 ERA and, you know, he threw 200 innings a few times early in his career. Anyhow, I remember going, you know what? I'm going to look deeper. Because that was when I was really starting to get inspired by advanced stats, sabermetrics. I looked deeper, 0.89 ERA. His FIP was over 5.
Holy shit.
Yes. And I remember, I brought this up on one of our podcasts when you and I first started doing the weekly recaps as a one-off. A little history lesson for you all, those listening. I used to do a podcast called Comedians Talking Sports, which is on the same iTunes feed as this, so you could go way back and listen to those. I'd have a different comedian on, and we would talk, you know, sports in general and whatnot. And then we started doing one-offs of starting in 2016. Where like once a week, you and I would do Comedians Talking Baseball as a one-off to Comedians Talking Sports. And then we just did it the whole season. And then we did it a little bit last season before I moved back to Chicago. And now we started it up again in 2018. It's been a lot of fun. But yeah, talk about discrepancy in ERA in your FIP. Because I remember that year Adam Eaton was killing it in right field for them. They had remember he was a center fielder and then they moved into right field where his defense went off the charts as a right fielder as opposed to
right fielder. Yeah.
And so he was just getting a lot of great defensive help. So that's where I like FIP because I'm like, oh, well, this isn't going to continue. And this is eventually going to swing the other way.
For the listeners who's like eyes have glazed over, FIP is fielding independent pitching. It's basically everything that a pitcher can control. So strikeouts, walks, home runs. And, you know, some people would argue that they can't control home runs, but whatever. After the ball gets hit into the field, basically, it's out of their fucking hands. And so it's not really fair to a pitcher if he has a shit defense that you're going to charge him the same as a guy with Ozzie Smith out there. So basically, if a guy has an amazing ERA and a terrible FIP, it means that his defense is great. Mm-hmm. And it kind of tells you, is this guy as good as he looks on paper, or is
the defense bailing him out essentially?
Right. And so sometimes I look at a guy, I look at their FIP and I'm like, okay, that's what FIP basically tells you, that's what his ERA kind of should be. And, all defenses being equal, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes I look at a guy's ERA and David Price had this problem for a couple years where he would have an amazing FIP and a terrible ERA. And guys on TV, like Brian Kenny would be saying stuff. And I was like, yeah, is he getting BABIPped? As in, is he getting bad luck with defense, or is he getting shelled? If you're throwing up meatballs up there, your FIP is going to be maybe fine. If you're throwing strikes and guys are just ripping fucking doubles into the gap. But it's like, I don't know how you figure out a way to say this guy induces weak contact. And even if that's a thing that they believe is a thing.
I don't know. They do have a weak, a hard hit contact rate. They do measure it.
Right. They do carols and stuff like that for batters.
Yeah, they do. So with all the, StatCast stuff is showing a lot of advances on this. But I can't remember what it was off the top of my head last year, but I remember the year Kyle Hendricks was the ERA leader in all of baseball. That was 2016.
Right.
And, I think his FIP probably said he should have had a 3 ERA, which makes sense because he's a guy that doesn't strike. He strikes, 8 batters per 9? It's not terrible, but he's
right.
Not.
And the Cubs haven't had at that point, a sick defense.
Oh, yeah, 2016 defense was unbelievable. So I looked further. The guy who induced the weakest contact for the baseball was Kershaw. The second guy was Kyle Hendricks. And then the rest of the top 10 were people who were like, well, yeah, that makes sense. These are all really good pitchers.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, so Hendricks does. If you watch his games, he's given up some more home runs this year, but he still gets a lot of guys to pop up or to hit weak little ground balls. Swinging bunt type things. So that's why I wonder where I'm like, I know Fangraphs WAR puts a lot into FIP, but I'm like, there's something about the guy who, can only be at 75 pitches going into the eighth inning because he's not striking people out. He's getting pop-ups and ground balls. He's keeping his defense on their toes. I almost feel like that shouldn't be overlooked because there are guys who operate that way.
Well,
Weaver was a guy like that. Maddox notoriously, Mark Burley. There were guys who were just like, oh, I'm going to put it where you can make contact, but you're not going to do shit with it because I'm going to run this ball in on your bat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just that it's harder to look at Kyle Hendricks year over year and say, yeah, this guy is going to be great. Because, when you're pitching to weak contact, it's just like, is it going to be weak? Weekly hit into the outfield for a single or a weekly hit right at wherever, I'd rather have a guy that can strike you. It can ring you up, but hey, I like a good defense too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of just goes both ways in a sense. I just want whoever gets results. That's why I'm not too quick to brush aside ERA. I know there are some sabermetricians who are just like, ERA, come on. Who cares about ERA? And I'm just like, well, it is what happened.
Right. That's why I like ERA, because it is exactly what you just said.
Which I think you said. So I'm probably quoting you back to yourself.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it is. I mean, don't get me wrong. I dig FIP, and you're right. I would, guys like Max Scherzer would go up there and strike out 13 guys while walking anybody. What a season he's having, by the way. Good Lord.
He had an immaculate inning.
Yeah. The immaculate inning. Yeah, damn, dude. I wish I had the list in front of me, but he joined a list of 5 other people who have done it more than once. Because there's been, a no-hitter, there's always one guy where you're like, that guy threw a no-hitter? What the hell happened that day,
Yeah.
The immaculate inning, there's been a lot of people who have done it once. Immaculate inning, for those of you guys who are wondering, 9 pitches, all strikes, strike out the side.
Yeah, it's more rare than just about anything.
Pretty much, yeah. But there's been a few people who have done it once where they must have just had one pitch work in that inning and threw it the whole time. Who knows, or they faced the 7-8-9 hitter and it just worked out, because you look at the rest of their career and they were a nobody. And the number of people who have done it more than once, though, is like the elite of the elite. We're talking Nolan Ryan, the guy you hate, Koufax.
Come on!
This is going to be a running gag I'm going to do with you all year round, just to fire you up a little bit. I don't know if I don't have the whole list, but I remember as you're hearing it, you're like, of course it's those guys.
Yeah, it's like insanity. And to put it, Scherzer should definitely be. I mean, Scherzer's looking at getting into the conversation for Hall of Fame. I mean, Verlander decided he wanted to be a Hall of Famer, so well, Scherzer's getting close, man.
I might lean his way. I mean, if he finishes the rest of the year the way he's been and wraps up his third Cy Young in a row. And
God damn, is it really three in a row?
It would be three in a row for him. His numbers are fantastic. He has a 0.83 whip right now. I'm not sure what his FIP is, because I'm bouncing around and I wrote down the
I don't even have to look. I think he's first in WAR, first in FIP, and second in ERA to DeGrom.
Yeah,
because DeGrom is silly this year.
Yeah, he's having a great year. I like DeGrom stuff. Anyway, though, yeah, of course, a guy like Scherzer, who I'm almost are we witnessing like one of the greatest right-handed pitchers in baseball? Is he going to be right up there in the history books? And we're not the way you and I are. Like, we need. I want to see little kids in every city wearing Mike Trout T-shirts. Is Max Scherzer getting into that conversation of just players who should be household names and they're not? I mean, if you're a baseball fan, you know Max Scherzer is, but I feel like the average person, if you stop the average person on any street, you in LA stopping them on Sunset and me stopping them on Milwaukee in Chicago, and say, hey, do you know who Max Scherzer is? I feel like they might be like, no, you know what I mean? That bothers me.
Yeah. Well, so I was actually thinking about this. I went to a Dodgers game not too long ago with a group of comedians and, you know, wives and girlfriends, and we sat way up into the upper deck in left field. It was mostly just like a hangout, but, you know, everybody likes a summer ball game. A few people were baseball fans. Most people were just like bullshitting through the whole thing. And I remember they were playing Miami, and there was a pinch hitter that came up, and they announced Ichiro Suzuki. And everyone there, I don't know if it was social proof, like if everyone just did what everybody else did, but everybody shut the fuck up and watched Ichiro. Like, I think that everybody knew or figured out, oh, this guy is different. We're seeing Ichiro. I don't know how to explain that, but so I thought about.
No, I think you summarized that pretty well. There are certain players who are stop in your track, stop what you're doing, watch them at bat. And you were right. Like, a bunch of people were just there for fun. They hear Ichiro. Oh, I know Ichiro. Time right. to pay attention.
So I looked at Bill James's superstar ranking thing, which I found fucking fascinating. He spends like 12 pages that you can skip through, like talking about like his thought process and trying to figure out what it was. So he has a list of 21 questions. And like you get a point for each time you can say yes to a question. And I just tallied up like Ichiro's, and it's weird. Cause I wasted a bunch of time looking at his baseball reference, cause he just gave it in like a thing and I was off by one point and I'm still mad. I can't figure out what I'm missing. Anyway, I was kind of thinking like, well, what does a guy have to do to have your buddies girlfriend who could give less of a fuck about baseball turn and go, oh yeah, Ichiro. I can tell people I've seen Ichiro. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So Ichiro wasn't a superstar on these rankings?
No, he absolutely is.
Oh, okay. I thought I misheard you. I misunderstood. I thought you said you were 1 point off from him being a superstar.
No, I was 1 point off. My point tally was different than Bill James's, and I can't fucking figure it out.
Oh, I got you.
Unless Bill James is giving him an extra point for being in an all-star game he didn't start.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. That could be it.
Because the points are like, did you set a record? Did you start on a World Series team? Did you start in an all-star game? Did you get 200 hits? Were you a 30-30 guy? Did you lead the league in home runs? You know, Did you have a 400 on base percentage? Did you have a 4 WAR or higher? A bunch of questions like that, because he wanted to see, is Bryce Harper a superstar? Because someone said like he was, and Bill James was thinking like Bryce Harper had one good year, but then he was like looking, he did his whatever superstar rating, and he was like, yeah, it's a lot higher than I thought he would.
Yeah. Now, I think a lot of people do think of Bryce Harper as one good year. It was one phenomenal year. One great year.
Yeah.
One, the line to suck my dick starts here year. Like, right. That's how phenomenal he was in 2015. And then he's had a couple other, like last year, Bryce Harper had a good year. He just missed the last 6 weeks of the regular season almost. I think he came back for the last week and then the playoffs against the Cubs. But it was still a good year if you look at his numbers.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a great year. And then 2016, he fell off. I don't know what happened to him in 2016. He had a bad 2016.
I'm really
kind of like Manny Machado. Manny Machado is another guy. So you got Manny Machado and Bryce Harper and then Donaldson. And then, well, I don't think Kershaw's opting out now with the season he's having, but he had an opt out that a lot of people thought he would exercise. Because I don't think he's going to make more on the market with these injuries piling up on him and being on the wrong side of 30.
Right.
So anyway, you got those are like, but really the big two are Harper and Machado, because it's rare to have two guys going into free agency for their age 26 season, about 25 right now. Both of them, I think almost Machado is more consistency, but both of them have had these freak years followed by what happened last year. Like last year, Machado was like, he didn't have a great year. But he still had 35 home runs. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
So I don't know. We're gonna tackle this one from a Cubs point of view. Machado or Harper, who do you want?
Oh,
we could revisit this one all year because that's gonna be the big talk going into the offseason.
You know what's funny bad. That I'm too much of like a Democrat when I do this sort of thing, because I have the hardest time hating on Addison Russell.
Why?
The Cubs have never had a decent shortstop my entire life. And
yeah, you're probably right there.
I mean, Starlin Castro.
Yeah, he had some solid seasons, but yeah, you're right. I mean,
they never had any.
Wasn't good defensively at all.
Right. I mean, I grew up with Sean Dunstan.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there were some bad ones. Remember they had Jeff Blauser for a year, and then Elson Zales, who was actually great defensively, but then messed it up at the biggest moment of his life. Who else? They had Cesar Asturias for a year, Ronnie Cedeno.
He should write a letter to Steve Bartman every year thanking him that he can show his face in public.
Yeah, you're right. Handsome face on that Elson Zales, too.
Yeah. it'd be a shame if he had to hide it.
Yeah, but look, I like Addy. I like Addison Russell. And I thought, you know, 2016, remember he was a starter in the All-Star game, which he did not deserve. But then by the end of the year, he put together a really nice season where I think he had a WAR above 4. His defense was fantastic. I think he was tied with Crawford for best defensive shortstop, but Crawford got the Gold Glove. He edged him out. And then he had a good NLCS into the World Series.
Yeah,
that big grand slam in game 6. He had a couple big home runs against the Dodgers.
Yep.
And I kind of thought, all right, people forget in 2016, Addison Russell was 22 hitting a grand slam in the World Series.
Yeah, youngest grand slams since Mickey Mantle.
Yeah, I mean, so you're thinking, all right, this is the turning point. 2017 is going to be a huge year. That's when he steps it into the Barry Larkin that scouts figured he'd become.
Right.
And he didn't. He had a bad 2017. He had some personal stuff off the field, you know. And then going into this year, it's not looking much better. And so you start looking at his 3 years plus, I could say 3 years and a couple months of MLB service. And he's never been an above average hitter.
I think it's funny that in like a contract year, quote unquote, players tend to do better. Like they have this like motivation. Like Manny Machado in his contract year is putting up like, you know, peak Manny Machado. You know who else this is a contract year for? Fucking Addison Russell, if you think about it. Because it's like any borderline, I'm on a contender and I'm not Manny Machado. Like, it's your contract year too, buddy.
Yeah, it really is. That's a good way to figure that out. But I wonder if they handle that pressure differently.
I mean, let's
you know what I mean? There's different pressures. There's pressure and then there's pressure. Like they say that there are some NBA players who, when the game is tied, they love trying to hit the game winning shot because if they miss it, they go into overtime. But when their team is down by one or down by two, those are the players who are less likely to take that game winner because if they miss it, they cost their team the game.
Yeah.
I got a lot of basketball references just because I watched a lot of basketball last week because it was the finals and, yeah. you know, I just got into it for the week. But I feel like it relates to what you're saying with this is a contract year for you too, Addison Russell. This is a contract year for a lot of shortstops or third baseman. If they could, it sounds like Machado wants to be a shortstop wherever he goes next, but it's definitely, hey, you're on the hot seat too. Cause there's a big prize out there and you're no longer pulling your weight. You're not even hitting your weight really. The Cubs, every regular on the Cubs is above league average in OPS plus except Addison Russell.
Well, speaking of like hitting your weight, by the way, like I was looking at this thing, no Cub regular has hit 300 since Starlin Castro in 2011.
I mean, that's the 300 batting average is slowly.
Right. It's not a thing.
It's not even right. Like, cause I remember I was at a party last night briefly and ran into a buddy of mine. He's wearing his White Sox sweatshirt. And I honestly we talked about the rebuild and I no longer hold that. Being a Chicago Northsider, Cubs Sox nonsense.
It's obviously funny what World Series will do.
That is what it will do. You're right. But it's and I'm older now. I'm not 22 or I'm not 16. Being like, oh, suck, Cubs are the best. You know, that nonsense.
Right.
If I see another baseball fan, I want to talk to him about baseball stuff that's fun to talk about. In a rebuild, especially seeing what the Cubs and Astros have done recently, is kind of fun to talk about. So anyway, we're going into that. And we talked about the 2005 White Sox came up for whatever reason. And I remembered at the time using this as going into the playoffs that year going, here's why I don't think the Sox are going to do shit and how it was a fluke season. I said they didn't have one 300 hitter. Because they didn't. I think Scott Podsednik had like a 292 batting average and he was like their best batting average. And I remember going, you can't win a World Series without a 300 hitter. Or if you do, you're lucky. You know, because it was just, I in 2005, I was still batting average RBIs home runs.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's completely different how that works out.
Yeah, you and most of the world, and my dad.
Oh, my dad's still like that too. His big thing is wins and losses with pitchers. He thinks if they're not winning, it's because they're not pitching deep enough. Because I go, it's out of their hands. You know, if the bullpen comes in and screws up, he goes, don't let the bullpen come in. I'm like, well, okay, but that's not how it works anymore. This isn't 1960 where 80% of or it wasn't even that high back then, but like 55%. Of all starts ended in a complete game, you know?
It's like you don't even hear, like, people are like, man, my Thanksgiving is terrible. I got a relative. It's like, why do they even want to get married? Now, but it's like your dad's going, nah, his win-loss record. And you're like,
ugh! Yeah, that's what it is in my family. You know, it was funny to me when, like, over election times, it's always like, have fun talking politics with your uncle who disagrees with you. And I remember going like, everyone in my family agrees 100% on the same shit, pretty much. You know what I mean? So I've never had that whole thing. Our arguments are usually like, that coach is a piece of shit, you know, Thanksgiving. He can't run an offense to save his life, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, who's talking politics at Thanksgiving?
Anyway? I know, that's weird. What are you thankful for? Well, I'm thankful that I'm allowed to still get an abortion in this state. Uncle Don doesn't think so, like, you know.
I don't know who's doing that. Like, could you pass the gravy? And I think teachers should be armed.
The worst family of all time is having that right now. I'm telling you right now. That is a weird thing. That's why they put football on Thanksgiving. You talk about football, talk about the food, talk about some desserts. You know, some Christmas stuff is coming out. And that's about it.
I have guys for a while, so I thought I'd tell you about the news programs I watch.
All right. I don't even want to get into that world. This is a baseball podcast, damn. We got to keep it baseball.
I'm saying it's like when you're trying to, I don't know. I've been trying to convince my father to, and my brother-in-law is from Venezuela, from the same town as Johan Santana. Anyway, like he was a huge soccer fan. And so we got him into baseball. We got him into the Cubs, but he was taught by my father And now I'm throwing like all this like stuff at him, and it's like, oh, this is, I need these fine gentlemen to pick up a book. I think if you look at the book, there's a brief chapter on it. I think you can go, oh, a 120 ERA plus means he's 20% better than league average. That makes sense in my brain.
Yeah, I think Brian Kenny's book, which I've recommended to several people, Ahead of the Curve, I think that's the best book to break people into advanced metrics.
That's a great...
The win-loss thing, he's got a whole thing about kill the win. You know, I don't agree with him 100% on everything. But the kill the win thing, the way he breaks it down, I'm 100% on board with, because he takes Earl Hershiser's 1988 and 89 season, or maybe it was 87 and 88. Anyway, those 2 years in the late 80s.
It's 88, 89, because Hershiser was actually better in 89.
But he won like 16 games in 89, but in 88 won 25. So the average fan would be like, well, he was clearly better in 88. When, no, you're wrong. In 89, he pitched more innings, gave up fewer hits, struck out more guys, walked less runs. You know what I mean? Like all the numbers were better in 89, except the win record, which shows you
right.
Like there's just a lot that's taken out of the pitcher's hand when it comes to that. So that kills the argument my dad will have, where it's like, well, they need to pitch deeper into the ballgame if they're blaming the bullpen for costing them games. Remember Felix Hernandez going 13-12? So yeah. Blylevin was Felix Hernandez.
Yeah, and they showed how many, like, 87 games or something, like, he had a lead blown for him. Maybe not that many, but it was, like, over 50. And, like, how his team did, like, what they averaged, like, in run. Because the thing is, like, you got to realize your team has to score more runs than the other team. What the fuck does that have to do with your ability to pitch? If you are giving up 3 runs or fewer, you are a good pitcher. If your team is not, like, getting 3 runs while you pitch, and you're good, you're fucked.
Exactly. And then there are some pitchers that get big run support, and then they could pitch differently because of that. You know, if you're on a team, I think Russ Ortiz for the Braves in like the early 2000s, mid 2000s, he was like 22-5 one year, and the Braves were scoring 7 runs a game when he pitched. They had a great offense anyway. They had an offense where, I mean, what, 2000s, they were probably getting 5.5 runs a game, I'm guessing, because the offense was big at that point. And him in particular was getting like 6-7 runs a start. That's going to relax you a little bit more as a pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday's Cubs game, the name of the pitcher for the Pirates is escaping me. I know it's Kingsman or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he pitched great. The Cubs won 2-0.
He pitched great.
And his 2, he hit Chris Bryant to lead off the game. And then Jason Hayward had the center fielder slipped. Otherwise, 9 times out of 10 makes that catch. And the ball went to the wall. So then it was 2nd and 3rd. Ben Zobrist hit a ground ball to the first baseman. 1 runs in. Anthony Rizzo flew out to the right fielder. 2 runs in. That's the ballgame. Cubs 1-2 zip.
Right. So that guy gets an L for that game. Because his team didn't score at all off of Lester and the Cubs bullpen.
And his defense let him down a little bit.
Right. So that guy pitched pretty great. And he gets a loss.
Yeah.
Because his team didn't score.
It's not fair, damn it. It is not fair. All right, let's go around the divisions real quick to wrap up the podcast there. Sorry, here we go. Yankees still atop. They are 700 win percentage, 42-18. They're 9 of their last 10, the hottest team in the American League. The Boston Red Sox, though, are holding pace. They're only half a game out, and they're 6 of their last 10.
You're going to think I'm crazy. I still think the Red Sox are better.
I don't think you're crazy. I think the Yankees just had an injury to their starting staff, I believe. And
yeah.
You're right. Boston has a lot to like. I think they're very comparable, and that rivalry has definitely been renewed and then some of, you know, kind of the last couple of years not really quite being what it was for so long, but it's definitely
right.
These are clearly powerhouse teams. Now we go to the AL Central, which is funny because we both reference them in our hypotheticals is a bad division. Well, because they are a bad division.
Yeah.
Cleveland is 33-29, four games over, and they're in first place by four games over Detroit, who are 31-35, and still kind of in one of those half-ass rebuilding mode type of situations that teams get themselves into. You know what I mean? Where it's like, we're not really trying to win. We didn't spend any money in the offseason, but we've still held on to some older players instead of just going full tank. They did the number one draft and number one pick in this draft, a pitcher out of, what school did they take him out of? Anyway, he got lit up yesterday. That can't make you feel good. Your number one pick gets lit up in his last college start. But again, it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And what do you think of this rally goose that Detroit's doing?
I haven't seen it, but I mean, fine.
I'm for Detroit. Anything that's fun, silly, and out there. So I haven't really dove into it either, but Tiger fans, give it a go, my friends. Minnesota's been disappointing this year. Maybe they'll have a big second half.
Maybe, but they tend not to.
No, the Sox and Royals are bad. Here's something interesting. The Seattle Mariners, since Robinson Cano gets suspended for 80 games for, what was he taking, estrogen pills or something?
It was
a diuretic of some kind.
It was diuretic.
Something women use to mask their period, I think. I don't know. I'm being a dick.
It helps him pee-pee out the estrogen.
Yeah, that he's using to counterbalance the HGH. 40-24. They're basically tied. They got a couple percentage points on the Astros, who are 41-25, but basically the same record. One loss behind in the loss column. Playing phenomenal baseball. 7 of their last 10. They are equal on the road and home. Seattle's got some fun players to watch. I mean, that Nelson Cruz was a guy, too, who got busted for PEDs way back in the day. And you thought that would hurt his career, but instead he keeps putting up monster slugging percentage seasons.
I think it's weird that projections are still buying Seattle. Look at their win or their run differential. Isn't it like 19?
It's not very good, and I don't have that up in front of me right now. Because I was looking the other day. The Astros are still number one in run differential. Then it goes Boston, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Braves. Those are your top five. The Cubs and Braves are kind of like, Cubs are number one in the NL, but Braves are kind of not too far behind them. And then Boston and New York are right there. But the Astros were pretty clear, like 20 runs ahead of the next best team.
Right. So I think that the Mariners are winning close games, and I don't know how long that's like tenable, but
yeah, I mean, that's, but then again, sometimes teams hold on to that throughout where they finish with a run differential that's not that high and they get in.
I agree with you.
I like it as a thing, like with when I brought up Matt Latos earlier and checking his FIP. That's what's kind of fun about these advanced stats. You could look and go, that's not sustainable. That right, he's off to a hot start, but he's going to look like the mediocre pitcher that we believe him to be pretty shortly. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, that's what I think that you're right. The Mariners will probably come back to the pack, and that's what's fun to see with this kind of stuff. By the way, MLB.com's website is dog shit. They can make this so much better. Like, I just want to get a box score so I can click on a player to get their numbers, but you won't even let me do that, will you? You know what? We need like a producer for this podcast so they can just have stats to go. And that we could get our sound quality to where I want it. I just wanted to check on Nelson Cruz because I saw he had a big home run the other day. I just wanted to see what his numbers were. Here we go. Nelson Cruz this year has 12 home runs. A good start. He has 0.7 war. But look, last year, 3.8. I mean, you take that out of a DH / outfielder. 4.2, 5 war season with the Mariners. So it's been a good contract for him. The Mariners signed about, I think this is his last year of a 4-year deal. I think it might be, but he's had 44 home runs, 43 home runs last year, 39. He's got 12 right now, so he's probably on pace for another 40 home run season. Digging a little bit deeper, he's at 158, 147, 146, 129 OPS plus. So, yeah, this has been a good contract. And he had that one-year deal with the Orioles after getting busted.
Yeah.
Remember he got busted for PEDs, signed a one-year deal with the Orioles for like $8 million.
The year they hit 5 home runs.
The year they what?
Didn't they hit like 5 million home runs in 2016?
It's 2014, yeah, because what's the name? Davis hit like 50 something home runs that year and struck out 600 times.
for that stadium so bad.
I do too. Camden and Fenway are the two big ones I want to check out. And it makes sense going back to Jay Jaffe's article about Anthony Bourdain, who, you know, again, a guy that I feel like everyone really dug. He talks about him being a huge baseball fan. And it makes sense because I feel like people who like to travel really like baseball because of there's so much history in different parts of the country that relate to baseball. And the stadiums are different. It's so much fun going to different stadiums. I don't know, football fans were like, dude, I got to get to MetLife Stadium. How have I not been to MetLife Stadium yet? How have I not been to the Vet in Philly? What am I doing?
Yeah. Like,
or the Link, I mean.
That's hilarious. Oh, right? Man. Got to go to the United Center.
Yeah, got to go to the UC. Like, it's no, they're all essentially basketball, hockey, football. Those stadiums are all essentially the same.
Oh, I got to check out Staples.
Yeah, dude, the Staples Center, bro. Oh, baby. Like, the urinals, top notch. Like, what could you say about these places? I guess that's the Buccaneers in football got that ship out there. The Vikings do that horn thing. I don't know. I mean, there's some good things, but you know, I've been to
the thing that they're building in Inglewood for the Rams and Chargers looks pretty sick.
I mean, I'm sure. I mean, they got like modern amenities to them, but essentially they all look relatively the same because all the fields are the same. Where baseball, it's 330 down this line, but then 350 down that line. You know,
baseball is a park.
Yeah, it's a park. Ooh, I like that. That's a good way to look at that.
It's a park.
To quote Billy Bean, how can you not be romantic about baseball? It's a park. A little Saturday in the park. That's what Chicago was singing about. They weren't singing about going to some park. They're talking about they're going to Wrigley. I made them Cubs fans. They're probably White Sox fans of the band.
I think it was the 4th of July.
Yeah, some Italian man singing songs. Was Harry Carey Italian? Was he singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game? Was that what we were talking about?
Harry Carabino.
Was that his real name?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely Italian. I know a Guinea name when I hear one. I'm kidding. I love all of our Italian friends. All right. Yeah, going around, I'm with you. I don't know if this Mariner thing is for real. And of course, we both have boners for the Astros. So I like them there. Boston, New York is going to be fun. I think right now, the NL Central, you got the Cubs about a half game back of the Brewers. Look, I think the Cubs and Brewers will probably be still within a game of each other around the All-Star break. Post All-Star break, Cubs win the division by 8 or 9 games. I think that's when the Cubs completely pull away from the Brewers. The Brewers have a great shot at a wild card, and I think that, you know what, I'd put some money down on them taking a wild card, but they're not going to be flirting with the Cubs as much as they've been flirting with the Cubs.
What about St. Louis?
St. Louis will be right there with Milwaukee competing with a wild card. I think right now the Cubs have been playing hot. They've won 8 of their last 10. And they've been winning in different ways. They've been winning some games where they just beat your brains in.
Right.
That was what was crazy. When the 2016 Cubs won 103 regular season games, they would have games where they would come into your town and outscore you 27-3 and just beat the shit out of you. And then they would have games where they would sweep you as well, but they won like 15-14. You know, they're winning the close games. They're winning the lopsided games. They're having comebacks. They're playing all nine. Jason Hayward is now an above average offensive player for the time being. He might have a bad week and go back for a while, but
and Granny was amazing.
Oh my God. That was unbelievable. I was playing in a softball game, first base coach. And I have that YouTube TV thing. So I was able to watch the game on my phone. And right when he hit it, I go, no way. And then my cousin who was, I think he just finished batting. I said to him, I go, dude, Hayward, walk off grand slam. Because I just told him, like, when he was in the deck circle, I go, Hayward's coming up to bat, bases loaded, 2 outs. He's like, oh, God, that's like the last person you want up. I go, yeah, who knows? Maybe a flare into the outfield gets 2 and we could go in extra innings. And then, grand slam, taking it home. It was beautiful. And Jason Hayward's a great dude, so you root for him.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, you know, you talk about Machado, Edison Russell. My only thing is, if Manny Machado is available, you get yourself Manny Machado, and it's hard to be sentimental. Like, I like Addison Russell a lot. I was hoping he was going to be the next big thing out of shortstop position. But if he finishes this year below average offensively again, and Manny Machado wants to come to Chicago, then you go get Manny Machado.
Also, he'd be a rental this year. And also, when we give the playoff picture, you got to realize that what it's become is at the trade deadline, everything gets flipped. You got, 2016, everything changed when Miller went to Cleveland and Chapman went to the Cubs. And so, like, whatever team, the Yankees are going to get some pitcher. The, you know, all of the contending teams are going to try to do the best thing.
No, the Brewers definitely have some bullets in the old trade chamber where they could make a sweet deal or two. They got an abundance of good outfielders. And the Cardinals, you never want to count out the Cardinals because they're such a smart baseball organization where they could pull off a move too. There's like a lot. Pittsburgh, I don't think, are going to pull off a move because I feel like they view this as a rebuilding year in a sense.
Oh, my God. They dumped Gerrit Cole and Andrew McCutchen. If they had the balls to try to get somebody, it's like, fuck you.
Yeah, that would be a stupid move. And they've got some young players who I think are going to be studs. I'm watching them in the background and I'll take on the Cubs. I definitely could see them being pretty damn good about 2 years from now. But I think they'd be, you're right. They're not going to trade any young players to get themselves a veteran to try to compete for a wild card. And that they've already fallen below 500. They've won 3 of their last 10. They're not, the Pirates are fading away like everyone kind of predicted they would around this time.
Yeah, that's what that fan base wants, another wild card.
Yeah, God, 3 years in a row losing that game. That's brutal for them. Especially since I was saying before, like, just as we started the podcast, a couple of those years, they were one of the best teams in baseball. They won 98 games in 2015 and played one playoff game.
Yeah.
I happened to run into Jake Arrieta, who was
unbelievable.
Yeah. Jake Arrieta was unreal in the second half of
2015. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that guy, you just knew. He knew. One of the most badass things I've seen an athlete do in baseball, because obviously athletes in some other sports get a little cocky and they show up and it's pretty cool. But the Pirates tweeted something out and Jake Arrieta like quoted the tweet and said, do whatever you got to do. Just know it doesn't matter. Like just the way he was just like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to come into your town and I'm going to fuck you up. It was kind of like a boxer or an MMA fighter, the way they talk. You know what I mean? It was like some kind of McGregor shit where it's like, here's what I'm going to do. Here's how I'm going to do it. There's nothing you can do about it. You know,
I can't believe he's boxing. Any shows without me asking you, hey, did you ever see him pitch really well?
Jake Arrieta, you know, I had one game I went to in LA when I was a resident of that fair city. He was pretty good. Yeah, he didn't allow any hits and maybe one or two base runners. It was, I think they called it a no-hitter. I think that's the term. And my pretty face was on ESPN that night. Dude, my phone still never, go ahead, I'm sorry.
The day after my bachelor party, and I thought I would be too hungover to go.
I know, man. You could have gone to that shit.
I turned down tickets from friend of the pod, Brendy McGowgows.
B. McG, Northside Timberwolf. Love that dude. I miss you guys. I think I'm going to try to come out to LA toward the end of August, so maybe you and I will actually be able to record while looking at each other in real life.
I know, and I have, you know, what's funny is, like, Donkey was at 2 games at Wrigley this week, sending me photos. Thank you, Donkey. That was fun to see. And I got another buddy who, my buddy Sam, who I went to the NLCS with last year, was at Wrigley. And I was like, man, I haven't been to physical Wrigley Field since February 2017, right before I recorded my album. I was in Chicago. I just had to go see Wrigley. I haven't been to a game in maybe 10 years.
You got to come on out, man. I'll get us some ticks. Yeah. You got to come out to a game, man. You got to visit Wrigley every few years.
Yeah.
It's good for your soul. You know what I mean?
I think it is.
Last thing I'll say, and then we'll end this podcast. Arizona Diamondbacks, Paul Goldschmidt is hitting the ball. And you knew he would. There's all those dudes where it's like, oh, man, he's off to a terrible start. And sometimes guys throw in a bad season in the midst of greatness. Y'all, every now and then you'll see, like we talked about, like Harper 2 years ago and Machado last year. Goldschmidt, though, is on fire now, and I think by the end, his numbers will look like how they typically do it in the back of the baseball card.
It's funny, though, like the Dodgers are at 500, and projections still have them taking it.
Really?
Yeah, man.
I just see too many injuries.
I looked at Fangraphs and at 538 late last night, and I was like, are you fucking serious? Like, they're still looking at, I think it's like 84 wins in the division. Like, they don't see the Diamondbacks as legit. The Diamondbacks aren't like, I mean, that's maybe a Goldschmidt drought or a slump or like a, I don't know, man. The Diamondbacks looked fringe on the projections, and the Dodgers still were expected to take it.
Yeah, they still, I'm looking at it right now. They have them winning 87 games, four ahead of the Diamondbacks. And I don't, that's weird to me, though. I just don't, yeah. I could see there's, obviously the Diamondbacks are not a perfect Seekers, team, of course. There's some flaws Seekers there. But, yeah, it's their Seager, who's their best hitter, is gone for the whole year.
Well, Turner's probably their best hitter.
Oh, yeah, Turner is. But Seager's the best player, I feel like.
What do you think of Matt Kemp?
Matt Kemp, oh, God, man. What a year. Like, he was, I think someone said it best. I can't remember what writer said it, but, I mean, it's what it was. He was an accounting trade, essentially a trade to shed payroll. Let's swap some bad contracts with Atlanta and try to get under that luxury cap. And they, there's no way they're expecting. Wasn't there rumors that they were even thinking about dumping him onto someone else, but they couldn't find someone who wanted him? But he had a good year 2 years ago with Atlanta.
Yeah,
I mean, not a great year, but like a good where you're like, oh yeah, this is a good player. You know, not like he was. I remember, like, he had some years with LA, like probably almost 10 years ago now, where you're looking like, wow, this dude.
Oh yeah, 2011. He probably should have won the National League MVP over Braun.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. He was phenomenal.
He was dating Rihanna. He was on top of the world, Matt Kemp.
Dude, him and Rihanna have like the same color eyes. They would have had some beautiful children.
Thank you.
What a bummer. I don't know why you're I don't know why you said thank you for that.
No, because
all right. All right, Brido. Real quick, man, best of nine. Why did they do it? Remember what we said, that we were gonna do some homework for the fans and then we're gonna end the podcast. Why did the teams, why was the World Series sometimes the best of nine in the late teens, early 20s?
2019, 2020, and 2021, the greedy-ass owners decided that they wanted to pump out more games and try to get more money from the fans. So they went from seven to a best of nine. If you're like 2019, 2020, that doesn't make sense. That only went seven games. Well, it's the best of nine that only went seven games. But so the most the World Series has ever gone is like, I think, eight games. If you look at the 1921 World Series, it was Giants versus Yankees, and Yankee Stadium had not been built yet. So every single game of the World Series was at the Polo Grounds. And every single game, one through seven, was at least 30,000 fans were there. In game seven, it was like 35,000 fans. Game eight, the deciding game eight, dropped 10,000 fans to 25,000 fans. The baseball owners and Major League Baseball went, you know what? Eight's too many.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So that's what
it's just a funny little blip in baseball history there. All right, Brido. You guys can follow him on Twitter at Brido, and you're at Mike Bryanson on Instagram, correct?
Yes, and if you want to go to Spotify, listen to my album.
There you go. Listen to The Hungry Wolf Hunts Best. Did I say that correctly?
You did, buddy. You nailed it.
I'm so proud of myself, man. I've got an album on there called Pay Attention. You can find me on Twitter, the podcast. Just type in Comedians Talking Baseball. I'm at Joe Kilgallen on everything. Write us a review on iTunes. It goes a long way. And thanks for everyone listening. Have yourselves a great week.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.